Hello, and welcome to Talking Brains, the podcast about brains, therapy, and how we think. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Sarkis. Go ahead and click that subscribe button and rate the podcast, too. It's appreciated. Today, we have a chat about mental energy with Irene Kirsnerman, PhD. Dr. Irene Kirsnerman is a licensed clinical psychologist with offices in Boca Raton, Florida. With over 20 years' experience, she has been trained to understand the relationship between the body and mind and to help people maximize their overall health. Dr. Kirsnerman's mission is to provide research-based, reliable psychotherapy and educational services in a way that anyone can relate to. After graduating with honors from New York University, Dr. Kirsnerman received her graduate education at Medical College of Pennsylvania, Hahnemann University in Philadelphia. After working in a variety of settings, including inpatient hospitals, intensive outpatient programs, community mental health centers, college counseling centers, and private rehabilitation programs, Dr. Kirsnerman entered private practice and continues to provide a safe environment, comforting support, reliable clinical expertise, and professionalism in helping others. Her website is drireneonline.com. That's drireneonline.com. And we're going to be talking about mental energy as expenses and income. Is your account balanced? Enjoy. Irene's based in Boca Raton, Florida. We met about 10 years ago and been friends ever since. And Irene's going to talk a little bit about how your personal energies are a commodity and a resource. So Irene, tell me a little bit about that and then the 3-Minute Thursdays that you've been doing.
The birth of 3-Minute Thursdays came from the fact that people are always talking to me about how busy they are. And that's where this energy thing comes in a minute. But sometimes we're also busy. There's so much going on in everybody's lives, and everybody has this goal of personal development and growth and taking care of themselves. But the first thing they say is, but I don't have time. But I think anybody can find 3 minutes, whether it's at while you're waiting for somebody or in a line, to really just take a minute and think about how they can improve their lives and how they can make themselves healthier. So I thought a 3-minute snip of here's something practical and accessible and concrete that you can do to kind of start thinking about self-care that would be easy to apply or relatively doable, at least. But as far as energy as a resource and as a commodity, so all the time, every time I'm in the office, I hear somebody say to me, I'm so tired, I'm so irritable, I just don't have the patience for anything, I don't know why, I'm anxious all the time, and I can't put my finger on what's causing it. And when I start asking them about their life and I start finding out what's going on for them, it becomes clear to me why they're so irritable or anxious or overwhelmed. It's because they are exhausted by all the demands of their life. And I've developed this metaphor over time to talk about energetic expenses. All the things that we do, all the effort that we put forth as parents, as spouses, as children, as coworkers, as friends, as people, as expenses, things we put energy into. And then there's energetic income, things that we do to kind of recharge our batteries. And that typically falls under 5 categories: eat, sleep, breathe, laugh, and move. But what people will do energetically is something that would make no sense to them financially at all. They say that I have so many expenses, I have so much to do, that the only possible way that I can pay all my bills is by quitting my job. So here's my plan. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to stop taking care of myself, and I'm just going to pay my bills. And when I say that to people in my office, they look at me funny because it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And then we start looking at, all right, let's run with this metaphor. Let's look at your energetic expenses. Let's look at what you're doing for energetic income to bring energy in. And let's see where your account's falling short.
Ah, okay. I like that account's falling short idea. So what's an energy kind of vampire and what's an energy giver?
Well, energy vampires are kind of a different category in the sense that that's the stuff that's... But energy vampire would be something that is sucking your energy resource and you're getting very little back from it. Like if you're running your AC with the windows open, you're going to have a high electric bill. You're going to have a hot house. it's not going to work. And those are the people or the things in your life that you want to evaluate and take a look at. Like, am I putting a lot of effort into this person, into this relationship, into this project? And what am I getting out of it? What's my return?
So I'm wondering, energetic expenses, are those tricky for people to change because maybe they are getting some benefit out of it?
I think it's when people start thinking, realizing, and labeling things as expenses, things I choose to spend a valuable commodity on. Some of them you can't give up, and some of them are tricky to give up because there is some gain to it, and now you've got to figure out, well, cost-benefit analysis, and what am I really getting out of it? But some of them are obvious when you start thinking, wow, what am I putting energy into? And some things that you might be doing are really, you're putting a lot of energy into it. You're not getting anything out of it. Like, for instance, relationships where maybe old friendships that you do all the work. You're the one constantly calling. You're the one constantly asking. You're the one putting all the effort in. And what you're getting back out of it is a sense of being rejected or being turned away. Well, why are you continuing to put energy into that? Is that an expense you want to keep paying?
So it's expenses that people don't maybe not even realize that it's costing them.
Right. Because people really aren't used to thinking of energy as something that they give. That's something
limited.
That they control of.
Right.
Right. If I say to you, okay, this thing, I'll give you an example. I had a client a few years back. She had a daughter in preschool, and she had her mind on this one preschool for her daughter to go to. Her daughter at the time was like 3 or 4 years old. In order to get her child to this preschool, it was a 45-minute drive in each direction during traffic hours, and she had to be late for work and leave early for work, and the daughter was not having a good experience there because the school wasn't adjusting to the daughter's needs, but the school had an amazing reputation. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about it. I'm like, how much effort are you putting into this? Mm-hmm. What are you getting out of it? And she's like, wait a minute, this really doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I said, you're making yourself crazy. Your daughter's going to learn to count anywhere. Your daughter's going to learn her colors in a good school. Yes, you have to pick a school that is going to be caring for your child and be the school you want it to be. But does it have to be that school? Do you have to spend 2 hours in the car going back and forth from preschool during rush hour stressing over your work? Mm-hmm. How are you spending more energy than needs to be spent on this? And she made the simple adjustment of switching her daughter's school to a school that was a little closer to home, that was a little more flexible to her daughter's personal needs, that didn't quite have the fanfare reputation, but it changed the life of her whole family.
It really reminds me of that solution-focused idea that change one thing and you change everything.
Exactly, exactly. And the other thing that people do a lot of times is when something happens in their life, like an event, their job goes on the line, or they lose a job, or they lose a relationship, something big happens in their life, the stress of that, they put more and more energy into the stress of that event, but then don't compensate for it. They don't take in more energy. And when I talk to people about, well, let's say you had a mortgage, you had a balloon payment on your mortgage. Wouldn't you need to figure out where that extra money was coming from? Mm-hmm. And they go, yeah, well, that makes sense. Well, if you've got this big thing going on in your life that isn't going on all the time, and that's an energetic balloon payment, where is that extra resource coming from? What are you doing less of, or what are you doing more of as far as taking care of yourself to make up for the extra energy that you're spending on this big event that's unavoidable?
So let's say you have a death in the family and you're grieving. You need to make sure that you're taking in enough income to cover your expenses.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Okay. And people will say to me, look, I'm usually okay. I'm usually okay. But for some reason right now, I'm not okay. And they start telling me, well, right now my, you know, we're down two employees at work, and my boss has given me this extra project to cover for the person who left, and I'm in the office really late. And I say, okay, well, what are you doing to make up for that? Mm-hmm. And they look at me with a blank face. They go, I don't have time to do anything else. I said, okay, so let me put it to you this way. You've added about a $500 expense to your weekly budget. Where's the extra money coming from? And now, well, that's right. A very good question. So are you taking a lunch break? Are you sleeping? Are you taking time throughout your day to take a break and call someone you love or laugh at something online to give yourself some energy? Another great example is people tell me that when they come home from work, right, that's always a really stressful time. You come home, you're already exhausted. You're already like down to your last 10 cents in your account. And now you walk into the house and your spouse wants something, or your kids want something, or your pets want something, and you're irritable and you're cranky and you're snapping at people and you're unhappy because the house doesn't look the way you wanted it to when you walked through the door. Well, is there a way, and this is kind of a practical application, what can you do in that car ride home to, while you're plugging your phone in from the day, also plug yourself in a bit from the day, recharge your battery a little bit, give yourself a boost on your way home so that when you walk through the door, you have some energy to deal with the demands of that in a calm, peaceful way that makes you somebody the people in your house actually want to live with.
And that could be just 3 minutes, like you were saying.
And that can be 3 minutes of deep breathing. That can be listening to something motivational on your ride home instead of just the radio station. That could mean putting on a video of your favorite comedian so that you can laugh on the way home. It can mean using your Bluetooth to be safe, making a phone call to someone that you've been meaning to catch up with. I catch up with all my friends on my drives because it's the only time I'm alone. If I'm alone in the car. But taking that few minutes to make a mental shift from I'm going to be taking care of everybody else to I'm going to be taking care of me, however that plays out for you. And I often have people make a list of all the things that they do that when they're done doing it, they feel better than when they started.
Energy givers instead of energy zappers.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. The energy income stuff. So I have them make a list of what are some things that you do that when you're done doing them, you feel better than when you started. How many of those can you do on your ride home?
And what are some that you see that may be common across people that's on their energy giving list?
Oh, the easy stuff. Laughter. People are missing laughter in their lives. And so we talk about what's your favorite comedian? What's your favorite movie that makes you laugh every time? Tell me the funniest story you can remember. Who makes you laugh in your life? How often do you call them?
Okay. That's a good point. Yeah, how much are you getting that positiveness?
Yeah, because laughter is the best antidote. Laughter is a biochemical antidote to stress. Mm-hmm. When we laugh, our body releases endorphins into our system that undo the damage that the stress hormones are doing all day long.
Right, and it is a healer. And I think that's actually one of the things we connected over is that laughter is a big part of both of our practices.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite things about our friendship is that when we get together, whether it's in person or on a call, we laugh through half the call. And right. You actually said a few minutes ago, if we're laughing, we're doing good.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And even before when we were talking, we were laughing right before I started recording about something. So I think people kind of underrate how important that is to get those brain chemicals up. And the interesting thing is you could just laugh even with no thing triggering your laughter. And even just laughing by itself, it feels like you're doing fake laughter, but it actually boosts your neurotransmitter levels. Just the act of laughing.
Well, that's the thing. The brain really doesn't distinguish well between a real laugh and a fake laugh. Right. Once you engage the muscles of your face that cause a smile, those muscles send a signal to your brain that, oh, look, she's smiling. She must be happy or he must be happy, and changes the neurotransmitter balance, changes the biochemical balance to actually create the sensation of happiness. Mm-hmm. So even if you're fake smiling or fake laughing, you are giving yourself a boost physiologically. And it's also really hard to do that and not start laughing for real, whether you're laughing at yourself for being silly or you're laughing because you remember something funny. I mean, I have a young daughter. She's 3 years old. And one of my favorite things to do is just randomly, spontaneously start laughing in her direction. Because she, first of all, looks at me funny, which I'm sure I need to get used to that. But she will start laughing. And then she starts laughing and I start laughing because she's laughing. And whatever power struggle we were in that moment, because she's three, the tension of that is now broken because now we're both laughing and now we're both willing to calm down and communicate and talk and work through.
Yeah, I think it's something that we really need to incorporate in our lives. I think, like I just said, you know, laughter's medicine. And it's one of those things, too, that you may not have the same sense of humor as other people, but your sense of humor works for you. So it doesn't have to be something other people agree with or that think it's funny or, yeah, I'm kind of known for having kind of a weird sense of humor, and that's okay. You know, I think when we meet people that have that similar sense of humor, I think helps. But I think that we really need to also realize that even when we're in a stressful situation, it's okay to laugh. Even if you've experienced the loss of a loved one, it's okay to laugh. And that person would want you to laugh and enjoy life. They wouldn't want you to kind of shut yourself down from that. And I think that's something I talk with clients about a lot, is that they experience grief and they feel like, well, I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to be enjoying something. And I'll say to them, I'll say, well, what would your loved one say about that? And they'd say, you know, they tell me to cut my crap or something, start enjoying life, you know, that kind of thing. Or like they tell me a joke and I go, okay. But so I think that's an important thing to notice, that it's okay to have fun even after you've been through something really hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the one thing that I think laughter and movement are the two things that we are lacking the most in our lives these days.
Now explain a little bit about movement. Is that just exercise or is it any type of...
The reason I don't use the word exercise is because for me, exercise is a four-letter word. I'm just simply not a fan. But movement feels doable. I can move my body through space. I can put my shoes on and go for a walk with my dog. I can put some music on and dance in my living room. I can stretch a little bit, stretch my neck, stretch my shoulders, stretch my back. I can move my body. I think when we say exercise to people, they get this glazed look on their face, like you want me to go to a class, you want me to get a trainer, you
or
want me
a whole hour.
To spend
on a
treadmill. Mm-hmm. No, that's not what. Well, yes, those things are healthy and beneficial. And if you have time, please, by all means, do that. But people are a little bit all or nothing about it. They say, well, if I can't spend the hour in the gym, then and I don't need to move my body. Mm-hmm. But any movement of the body gets the blood flowing, gets the energy moving, gets you out of your head and into your physicalness for a few minutes, even if it's just walking outside for 10 minutes or stretching your body while you're standing there trying to cook dinner.
Or parking further away from your office and walking in.
Parking further away from your office and walking in. And if you have kids, one of my favorite things to do with her is throw on some music and have a spontaneous dance party.
Oh, I think that's a great way to move. Yeah.
It's 5 minutes of time. Mm-hmm. And if you're not laughing at a dancing kid, you know, it's a 2-for-1 deal. How often
right.
do we get?
And it's good for their development too. So if you're a parent that wants to, you know, help your kid's motor development, great way to do it. And you're moving around and your kid loves it. It's great bonding time, I think.
Yeah. Win-win. So yeah. That's why I talk about movement instead of exercise, because we could all move
mm-hmm. right.
a little bit.
Right.
And any movement relaxes those muscles. When we get tense and that tension sits in those muscles, our brain reads that as something's wrong.
Mm,
even okay. if you're, you know, your back is stiff from sitting all day, from sitting at your desk all day, your body is going to register the tension in the muscles of your back and go, something's wrong, there's tension. And now your body is on edge and anxious, the alarm system of something's wrong in our body, our anxiety system is now triggered, looking to see what's wrong. Right. And now anxious and on edge and kind of looking around our, looking over our shoulder with the sense of impending doom, and we don't know why. Right. Well, it's because your body is sending a message that something's wrong, even though it's not. It's just from sitting too long in an uncomfortable chair. Right. So every once in a while, take a spin around your office. Forget something in your car so you have a reason to walk out to it and come back. Right. Let those muscles stretch out so that your body isn't sending a message to your brain that there's tension afoot, something's about to happen, keep an eye out, because that's what is the underlying cause of anxiety and unnecessary worry.
Right. And even moving around for 15 minutes boosts your brain chemical levels. It's amazing how little you have to actually do to feel better. Those are studies that just came out. 15 minutes, that's it. And one study even found within 5 minutes that your brain starts functioning better once you start moving.
Right.
So it's really remarkable. But I really like the way that you're framing it as movement instead of exercise. Because what I've noticed is that people that need your techniques the most tend to be all or nothing people. Like, they operate really high functioning, so they're either operating at 150% or they shut down. And so I think this is a really good way of looking at it, that, you know, progress is progress. If you're moving for 5 minutes, that you can check that off. You know, you don't have to do it for an entire hour. You don't have to get to the point where you're exercising for 2 hours straight or something crazy like that. So I really like that concept that it's just any kind of movement's good. Even sitting out, I tell people, sit on a Pilates ball if you can at your desk. You're moving while you're working. So it's a great way to incorporate that. So I really like that piece of it. So, and how about people that, tell me about sleep. Like, tell me what you've noticed with people that when they're in their accounts kind of overdrawn, what does their sleep look like? And what are some ways that people can earn back that sleep?
Well, I mean, I think the personal experience here plays a big part of that for me as well, because if you don't have a small kid, the sleep deprivation that comes with, you know, you really are not sleeping for a couple of years at least. Mm-hmm. Well, but when people's accounts are overdrawn, two things happen. One, the stress is taking their sleep away. And two, the sleep is what they need to rest their brain from all the thinking and worrying and processing that they're doing all day long to recharge. So you end up with a double whammy. Not only are you so stressed that you can't recharge, and so you can't be less stressed, and you fall into this cycle. And what happens with sleep deprivation is that our cognitive functions just decline exponentially, and we can't process, we can't problem solve, we can't remember, our memory starts to fade, to suffer. We can't, all the our executive functioning, all the planning that we need to do on a daily basis really takes a hit. We have a term that I've used with some of my mommy friends called mombies. They're mom zombies. They're people who slept in a while and don't expect much from them because they're basically on autopilot.
Right.
So when that happens, everything suffers. Every ounce of your health and your being and your thinking and your feeling and your ability to manage your emotions and your problem solving, everything gets affected. So how do you recharge that? That can be sometimes trickier. The important, you know, basic sleep hygiene stuff is super important. Trying to get to bed at the same time every day, trying to wake up at the same time every day, trying to have a sleep environment that's actually conducive to sleep, as far as lighting, as far as temperature of the room. But the reality is that sometimes our life disrupts our sleep. And just being at least mindful that if your sleep is affected, and despite anything that you do, you cannot increase your income with sleep, make sure that your other self-care behaviors are either compensating or at least covering a little bit for it. Like, if you're not sleeping, make sure you're eating well.
Okay, so that's a great concept that you can take from other pieces. If you can't meet it in one area, you can earn income in other pieces.
Right.
Okay.
And be mindful of, hey, I've lost that income stream. Where am I going to make it up?
So you can even take this into a pie chart thing of where am I getting my energy from and where is it low? Okay.
Absolutely. And usually when I start working with people on this concept, what I have them do is make me a couple of lists. I want to know what your energy income typically is, mm-hmm. what you do that makes you feel better after you've done it. And I want to know what your energy expenses are. What are the things that you do that after you're done doing them, you're tired?
That's a simple way to frame it too. I like that. What makes you feel more energy? What makes you feel less energy?
Right. And then when people see that one list is substantially longer than the other, then I say to them, well, how surprised are you now that your account is overdrawn and that you're feeling the effects of a bounced energetic check, which is anxiety, depression, frustration, irritability, all those overwhelmed feeling. That's what being overdrawn feels like.
And as a parent, and then you're withdrawing from other people's accounts when you come home and you're crabby, like you were saying before.
Exactly. Then you become somebody else's expense rather than somebody else's income. So if your spouse comes home and you're barking at them and you're tired and you don't want to hear about their day, well, you were their income and now you're an expense because now you're, and everything shifts.
Right.
But you can, once you see it, you can say, oh, you know what? I really can do more of that. I can laugh more often. I can move more often. I can take time that is, you know, empty time, so to speak, in a car or in a line and really practice deep breathing in that moment.
What's great about it. It's so versatile. You could, again, you know, 3 minutes deep breathing and then diaphragmatic breathing with your tummy.
Exactly. So, I mean, and that's really kind of the crux of my work. I want to make things practical for people. There are so many therapists and coaches and people out there who kind of talk about these great theories of how the importance of positivity and all of these things, the importance of self-care, and all of it is great. But a lot of times when I walk away from them after having, you know, 20 years of experience in my field, I still don't know how to implement that in my life. Mm-hmm. And if you can't implement it, you can't use it. So what I really work on with people is, how do we implement this? How do you make this practical and accessible for you, doable for you on a day-to-day, rather than something you heard once on a podcast or something you therapist once said to you?
Because everybody at some point is going to be in the grocery store line. It's 3 minutes while they're waiting. No matter who you are, you have that time. Right. So it's definitely applicable.
That's right. Or you're going to be driving in traffic, or you're going to be stuck somewhere. And do you want to take that moment and say, hey, I can do this fun thing right now, or I can do this breathing thing right now, or I can connect with another human being right now in a positive way and, you know, top off my tank a little bit, get a few extra bucks in the account before I go home and, you know that my house is going to be a mess because there are other people who live there.
Right, right. So a lot of it is sometimes looking at your expectations, it sounds like, as well.
Absolutely. And that's kind of looking at expenses. One of the things, like, I notice for myself is when I really focus on, okay, well, what does the kitchen counter look like? Mm-hmm. If I put energy and use that as an expense of being frustrated with the fact that something's not the way I want it to be, well, that's an expense. Do I want to spend energy on that?
Right.
Not so much. You know, in the big scheme of things, if I have, you know, let's put it into language we all can relate to. If you have $5 in your pocket, what are you going to spend it on? Are you going to spend it on food and something that's going to sustain your life, or are you going to spend it on a new pair of earrings?
For me, it would depend on what the earrings look like. And if they were on sale.
I love you. You find that point to laugh at. Yes, it would absolutely depend on the earrings. But, you know, the earrings are pretty, but they're not going to sustain your life.
Right, right, yeah. They give you a little boost of dopamine, but, you know, after a while that wears off and you're hungry. Yeah.
You do, right. So if I have $10 in my pocket, I'll spend the $5 on the earrings and get a burger. But If there's only $5, I might be a little bit more selective.
That's also kind of the crux of ADHD, too. You got $5, and it's like, oh, something sustaining you or earrings. You're probably going to go for the earrings, so you don't think. But I think this is a good way that your system is a good way for people to kind of step back and go, wait a second, is this a need or a want? You know, I've got this time.
That's a whole other conversation about what our needs and what our wants. And that's one of the things I talk about with people when we look at their expense list as to, okay, why are you doing that?
Like, why are you on 5 different committees? What are you getting out of them?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And why are you on to relationships that are more draining than fulfilling? Why are you saying yes to every request from the PTA or I know I'm using a lot of parenting language. That's kind of
Okay.
My head is at because of my life. But why are you saying yes to all the things that you're saying yes to? Why are you saying no to all the things that you're saying no to?
Right. Why are you saying no to energy giving things?
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. And then what role does delegation play into? Like having somebody delegate out tasks. Does that play into earning more income?
Well, that actually plays into reducing your expenses, right?
Okay.
So there's two ways to balance any budget. You reduce what you spend and you bring in more, right? So if you have something on your expense list that really belongs to somebody else, that really should be on somebody else's expense list, like you're doing something for somebody or somebody else could do it too, then maybe that's something you can take off your expense list by delegating it to somebody else.
Ah, okay. And it doesn't have to be exactly the way you would do it. I tell people if it's done like 80% of the way, that's fine. If it's done even 50% of the way. I mean, sometimes it's just get the thing done. It doesn't have to be perfect. So I think perfectionism is also an expense too.
Well, perfectionism is absolutely an expense because it elongates your expense list.
Ah, okay.
Perfectionists will want everything done a certain way, so everything is on their expense list. And now there's no possible, there's not enough hours in the day for that kind of income.
Ah, so it's learning how to let some things go.
Right. Okay. So we're looking at two separate functions, decreasing our energetic expenses, increasing our energetic income. And when we look at decreasing expenses, we look at perfectionism, we look at not delegating what needs to be delegated. We look at wants versus needs. We look at outdated expenses, you know, that service that you started paying for 20 years ago but forgot to cancel.
A lot of that we have, I think.
So those are the things. That's why that list of expenses becomes so important, because then we can go item by item and itemize it and say, okay, what's this expense about? Why is that still on your list?
I would venture to even say this may be actually fun for people, because they're able to delineate exactly where they're putting their energy and where they're getting their energy sucked out of them at. So I think it's actually kind of a relief when people start writing this stuff down. Have you noticed that there's kind of a lifting of emotion?
It's incredibly empowering, because when we start this conversation, the buzzword that sends me to this approach is, I don't know why. I'm feeling this way and I don't know why. And the minute somebody says, I don't know why, I'm like, okay, we need to figure this out, because if you did know why, then you'd know what you could do about it. The problem with I don't know why is it leaves us feeling helpless and powerless. And once you can itemize it and figure out what you can do about it and come up with a game plan, now you do know why, and now you know how to change it, and now you're empowered, and that's fulfilling, because as you're making these changes and you're starting to feel better and you're noticing that things that used to break your bank before seem easier, now there's the sense of, I did that, I made myself better, I helped myself, and there's nothing more empowering than that.
And then that keeps that ball of success rolling, kind of, once you
Absolutely. What
would you say when someone looks at their expense list and there's one person in particular that keeps popping up? Let's say it's someone that is an energy zapper, like you mentioned, you know, someone that really ask a lot from you, but then when you ask them for something that they don't provide it, what's a way to kind of even that expense and income out?
Well, the first question is the expense eliminatable? Mm-hmm. Can you cut it off? And sometimes you can, mm-hmm. and sometimes by virtue of circumstance, you can't. If you can't eliminate that expense, then you have to start being clear to yourself that that particular person is an expense in your life.
Okay.
And you need to manage that expense. Every interaction, you've got to make a conscious decision about how much effort do I want to put into that interaction? How much am I going to speak to that person today? How much am I going to put into a conversation with that person today? And if you set your limits there, maybe limit the amount of time, limit the amount of energy, limit the amount of upset that you're willing to give yourself leeway for in dealing with this person. And then if you have had an interaction with that person that day that has drained some of your energy, all right, now I need to refill on that. What am I going to do to now take care of myself, to eat, sleep, breathe, laugh, and move, to make up for this energy that I had to spend, that I couldn't get away from, but really there's no benefit to. But I had to do it. So now how am I going to make up for it?
And can you also do this? Well, let's say like you're going to a family reunion. There's somebody there that you know is just an energy taker. So could you, on the way there, would you recommend maybe practicing some of this stuff, like deep breathing and maybe some positive self-talk? And
absolutely. If you know you're going into an energy zapping situation, come into it with a savings account. You know, your rainy day. We financially we're told keep 3 months supply, right? So have that rainy day fund ready for the extra energy that you're going to be spending. Spend that drive laughing. Spend that drive planning for fun activities with the people that you actually do like to see. Spend that time reminiscing about all the things that make the people, other people you're about to see, positive people in your life, so that the energy zapping person just becomes a side effect, an annoyance of a thing that you have to put up with.
So they're taking pennies out instead of whole dollars.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay. I really like that concept of a rainy day fund, that we all need to have this replenishment of stuff to get out of it when we've, especially because we all have days that are just kind of rougher than others. And I like the concept of just taking a mental health day for yourself. Sometimes you just need to take a break. And it sounds like that's kind of akin to a rainy day fund. That's, you have a day where you just have fun and you don't do heavy stuff. And you have to schedule that. And it may feel like you don't have time to do that, but I always tell people you don't have time to not do it.
Exactly. And that's right in line with this concept, right? If someone said to you, I don't have time to go to work today, I have to pay my bills.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That would, you know, somebody would look at you funny for saying mm-hmm. that. But we say all the time, I don't have time for a mental health day. Well, where are you getting your income from to do all the stuff the other time?
Right. I really love the practicality of this because I think this applies to everyone, regardless of income, culture, experiences in life. I think this can help a lot of people.
This isn't new information. This is mm-hmm. age-old information. It's just taking it into a metaphor that anybody and everybody can relate to.
Right.
Because we all spend in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we all earn in our lives. And most of us have had a moment in our lifetime where we didn't earn enough to cover everything we need to spend. Mm-hmm. Most of us understand a little bit of financial tension, resource tension. Mm-hmm. And so when you put it that way, it takes the skills that we have, a skill set that we already have as far as budgeting and allocating resources, and applies it to self-care. It's not a new thing that we have to learn. It's just using something we already know how to do to get an outcome in this particular area.
Now, what would you say to people that, as in closing, how to keep track of, besides contacting a therapist like yourself, what are ways that someone could right now start increasing their income?
Make that list. Right now, sit down and write a 5-6 item list of what are the things I do that when I'm done doing them, I feel better than when I started. And ask yourself, when was the last time I did that?
And I think that's something that would only take about 5 minutes for people. So you're saying make a list of 5 or 6 items that you feel better when you finish those than when you started.
Exactly.
I think that's an excellent place to start. So, and again, counseling is very helpful. Coaching with a licensed psychologist like such as yourself helps. I think sometimes we all need that person that kind of helps us with that, because I think it's hard for a lot of people, for even for us as therapists, as regular people, to look at our expenses and our income. So I think it always helps to have a neutral third party to help you along with that. So I really appreciate you spending time talking about that. And I think you're going to help a lot of people who are listening today.
I hope so. And thank you so much for giving me that opportunity. I appreciate
thank
it.
You. That was Irene Kirzmerman, PhD, and you can find her at drireneonline.com. That's drireneonline.com. And I'm Dr. Stephanie Sarkis at stephaniesarkis.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Stephanie Sarkis and Instagram at SarkisPhD. And if you have topics or people you'd like to hear on Talking Brains, email me at stephanie@stephaniesarkis.com. So hit subscribe, rate us, and have a great day. Thanks. Bye.